Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
It's time for another episode of the TC Live Podcast on the Tennis Podcast Network. We're almost wrapping up February. The tennis season is picking up. We just crowned champions in the Australian Open. I'm Mitch Michaels here hosting again this week's show, joined by now a three-time guest, Nico Pereira. Nico, thank you for joining the show.
Third time lucky, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I'm really excited, always excited for tennis, but I think the biggest thing that we're kind of getting to is a little more normalcy in the schedule. Like, it's February post-Aussie. We got a lot of tournaments going. It's time for, you know, the tennis nerds like ourselves to really zone out here and really dive into tennis. But we should put a bow on the Australian Open before we get going. Last week, we had a show, myself and Paul Anacone recorded the day of the women's final, where we kind of looked ahead at those two final matchups. And they went pretty much chalk with Osaka and Djokovic essentially dominating their way to get the titles. For Novak Djokovic, and I want to start with him first, it's now an unprecedented 9 Grand Slam titles in Australia, 18 total. Half of his total, Nico, comes down under. And if anything else, not surprised by the result, but the fact that he is essentially keeping that distance between him and the next generation as large as it's been. A straight sets dismantling of a guy in Medvedev who hadn't lost in a couple months and had been running roughshod over the top 10. As thorough and impressive a victory in Djokovic's run down under that we've seen.
What surprises me about Djokovic is his mental capacity to overcome tough moments against great players. And it's only fair that he made Australia his own after the dominance that Rafa and Roger have over Paris and Wimbledon, respectively. But his game is just perfect for that surface. You know, the height of the ball is right there. The fact that it's at the start of the year, maybe he has that switch, I kind of feel. Rafa needs to be in a clay court groove to
like
get
he's
to kind of
like an engine that needs to rev up a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, as we've seen, he can get to Paris in any which way, shape, or form
any
that
month,
he'll perform. Roger, you know, with his slice and his pace and his control of height, it's custom made for the grass. And Nole just seems to be, you know, one of those guys that he can adapt, but obviously the conditions in Australia suit him very well.
Tactically, in that match, specifically the final, did anything really surprise you? Just from my untrained eye, I saw him say, all right, Medvedev is a guy that's, you know, great on the angles, can find shots from the corners. Djokovic essentially said, all right, I'm going to keep it in the middle. You're not going to find those angles on me, and I will just wear you down. And again, typical format for Djokovic, wins a late first set, and then just kind of gains confidence from there and ultimately does wear Medvedev down.
Yes, Medvedev surprised me a bit in the letdown. It's understandable considering who he had in front and the consistency that Djokovic showed. I don't know, Craig Shaughnessy might have something to say about this, but the strategy was brilliant and it worked out that way. And it ended up being in Novak's probably, you know, easiest match considering the circumstance that that I've seen him play.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to me that, you know, you could come in now with momentum. Essentially, we're at a point where until we see it happen, it's going to be hard to believe that it's actually going to. Like, Medvedev had all the momentum in the world, had beaten Djokovic before, had all the wins, like we said, over top 10 players. But best of five in general, and in that slam specifically, it's getting to a point where it's kind of like Rafa on clay. Like, until we see it, Djokovic is undefeated as the one seed down there. He doesn't lose when he gets quarterfinals on. The next generation that has made some steam, that has, you know, had some impressive wins in this tournament, I'm at a point now where I'm going to have to see it to believe it. Like, Djokovic is still on top. He's still the apex predator.
And it looks like he'll be there for a good long while, because the way he has prepared mentally and especially physically, you know, he's been taking care of his body in a way that it's ahead of its time. And I feel that looking at what Roger has done, how long Rafa has endured with the style of play, that Novak is looking at, you know, 5-6 years at his peak physically, and who knows where those numbers will get to. But I'm one of those that people love talking about this, but I just, you know, consider myself lucky to have lived this period, and I enjoy tournament by tournament.
We're going to get to Roger and Rafa a little later, but you're right on that. It just seems like he's going to have more cracks at seriously racking up Grand Slams. It is funny to believe that in 2002, after that U.S. Open where Pete Sampras got his 14th title, to think now that less than 20 years later, there'd be four guys that just raced right past him is pretty insane. Looking at, you know, the rest of the tournament on the men's side, Nico, there were some other impressive moments, some other storylines. You have Karatsev coming from literally obscure to a semifinal in his first Grand Slam. And you have another semifinalist in Tsitsipas who, you know, fell flat in the semifinal against Medvedev, but he beat Nadal down 2-0, which rarely ever happens. So there were some other storylines in this tournament. I was excited. What really stood out to you on the men's side, aside from Djokovic's dominance, of course?
Well, yeah, Karatsev, it's what catches my eye. It's the most unusual circumstance in the whole tournament. I've seen a few of those through the years, you know, mm-hmm. Ferkerk, if I remember correctly, in Roland Garros. We've had a few. I would like to see him maintain that level. I mean, somebody that comes in out of the blue without many wins and breaks through in that way with that on that field.
And to beat the guys he beat. Like, exactly. It wasn't like
on that field. On that field. He's not like, you know, players were dropping out in front of him. No, he was beating them. And I would like to see him continue that. That's what I'm curious about.
I think Tsitsipas, just to kind of talk about him, the match against Nadal showed that he definitely has a lot of heart, and he does dig in when he's down, because that completely flipped in a third set tiebreaker. He now has wins in Australia over Federer and Rafa. He's, you know, beaten just about everybody outside of the Grand Slam sphere. Still, obviously, very young. You just feel like he's right on the verge of putting it together. Like, he has big wins. He has a game. Both his forehand and his backhand are great, and his serve is big. I actually almost feel like he's still growing. He might be 6'5 now, but he's someone that I think, you know, is just quite there. Like, he hasn't fully gotten over that hump, but it's getting closer.
Well, I was courtside for that Federer win, and it was impressive the way he defied the personality he had in front of him. He doesn't care. You know, he's of Greek descent, but he has that Russian mother, so he's got that thing going on in his head, that irreverence in a way, that Latin flavor from the Greek side. And and then I just think he's grown, as you've mentioned, physically. He's a very strong. If you sit behind him when he's warming up, and you see he has a very heavy racket, and his ball is just penetrating. You know, it's a hard shot. And then the belief in his eyes since he was a kid. You know, he's not shy about believing in himself. Someone very close to the tennis world said, if there is one thing he's not, is humble. But I've had good experiences with Mr. Tsitsipas. And then when I saw, to be precise, on this match against Rafa, I feel Rafa tightened up in his back in the third set. I could see it in his movement. Then he tried to loosen up. He will never admit it, because Rafa is awesome at that. But yes, credit to Tsitsipas. He's been working on improving his mentality, and you could see it in his eyes. He was trying to maintain a flat line in terms of not getting too high and not getting too low. I think it worked for him against a guy like Rafa. You know, and he did. If you look at the end, he did not even really celebrate like he's done in the past, and it's certainly not with a sizable win like that, beating Rafa. Anywhere, it's something to really behold. So I think he kept his emotions in check, and if he manages to keep going that way, definitely You know, he's a guy that has made strides towards winning his first big one.
After he lost the U.S. Open match to Čorić the way he did, like, I'm serious. I thought it was going to take him a lot longer to put that to bed, but you kind of have to be a little bit crazy to, you know, compete at this level and to believe that you're going to be able to beat a guy like Rafa down two sets going into that tiebreak. So I'm with you there. It was a fun tournament on the men's side. The women's side, I think, can be summarized as this. We saw Naomi Osaka just plant her flag in the ground like, I'm the best player on this tour, regardless of what the rankings say. Four Grand Slams now. And still at just 23 years of age, herself, Nico, well, we're at a point where this reign doesn't really appear to have an end in near sight. She could get to that point now where she starts collecting slams and it wouldn't shock many people.
Well, that's what this win points to. Is there a new sheriff in town? Definitely, but I think the deputies are pretty close. You know, you have Halep that on the clay be hard to beat. I think Naomi has issues moving on the clay.
Right.
It's something that she has to work towards. I would like to see Muguruza put it together, definitely.
That was the toughest match she had, was that Muguruza.
That was a good match. So I like that rivalry. I think that would be a healthy rivalry just because of the contrast in cultures. I think Naomi has grown in terms of the way she's communicating, because she seemed to be a person that was feeling a lot, but was not able to express a lot, at least to the level that I can hear her. But she seems like a very, you know, funny person, has a great sense of humor, is very open-hearted. And I just feel that with the wins, that self-confidence, it's pouring out. And that could be something that leads her to greatness, because she will be able to express herself. I saw her a lot looser on the court, and she is very, very powerful, and she has been able to capture that power and control it for her benefit. Sometimes she was just overhitting herself to a loss, and I think she has controlled that.
That Muguruza match, we've all known that, for lack of a better word, Naomi has a ton of sizzle in her game. But saving those match points, true that there is some, you know, some real stake there, some real toughness that she could grind out in key moments. There is something about her, especially now, like, I agree, the progression in her, you know, maturity in her game. In major finals, she is at another level. Like, she talks about reveling in the fact that, hey, no one remembers second place. It's just the first loser. So I'm with you there. But yeah, there's a new sheriff in town on the hard courts. We know tennis is played on multiple surfaces, so Wimbledon and clay are going to pose some different things. But I thought it was a fun Australian Open for the women. Jen Brady making the final was a phenomenal story as well. And you saw the upsets and the moments in that game and in this tournament that really make tennis enjoyable. I thought Tennis Australia, like, we've been beating the drum over, did a great job, and the players bought in, and we got A-level tennis from the start.
Yeah, my good friend Craig Tiley, I've known since his college days, and he aged a bit in the last 3 months. So
it seemed like it.
But great job, fantastic. The whole Tennis Australia structure, all the people, it's a huge undertaking, and they did it successfully. And I like the fact that they include the ex players; they really play a role. You know, Paul Kildare does a great job there. John Fitzgerald, it's involved. Wally Masur, Todd Woodbridge, everybody. So they have that flavor of people who have been in and around tennis in many ways, and you can see that's where it came. But in terms of Jen Brady that you mentioned, I had been following her because I was at the Greenbrier for the World Team Tennis and spent 3 weeks there, and I was able, through Craig Carden, that was one of the captains also, to live, you know, how the players were dealing with this pandemic. And Jen is, you know, she took the step to go and train in Germany with Michael Gesserer, who used to play at my time. He coached Julia Görges to the top 10. Mm-hmm. And then the audacity of Jen to go outside the box and search him out. And then the evolution through the summer of how she was playing last year, and then to come this year and go to the finals in a slam, is just fantastic to watch.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
More with Nico Pereira on the TC Live podcast and the Tennis Podcast Network. Some other thoughts of players getting into this week. We mentioned the women's game has a 500-level event in Adelaide, which is another great thing that the tour has done. One of the players that struggled in Aussie and then struggled a little bit in Adelaide is your world number one, Ash Barty, who, you know, did a lot last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, when she got to number one, won the French Open title, won Miami, and has not played tennis, which getting the reps in is important to anybody, Nico. But I would say, you know, no disrespect, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, but she was someone that had to kind of play herself into that level. Like, she got her reps in. It was a slow process to get to number one and to win a major. I feel like her lack of reps, maybe more than most players, is really hurting her. I think she's even said the schedule going forward is going to be a challenge for her. And I do have some concerns with how she's going to get her reps in and try to maintain that elite level.
Listen, I have no concerns about Ash Barty. She's epitome of an athlete, and she's well-centered. She proved it when she was being successful at the doubles stage, but not at the singles, and she decided to go cricket on us, and she was a champion, and then came back and did what she did. She's centered, and I'm one of those that thinks that tennis is not all.
Right.
There are other many things much more important, and I think she has her priorities straight. She talked about the reason she didn't travel during the pandemic, because it was not only her, it's about the team, and yeah. I buy into all of that, and I think she will get to her level. She's concerned about being the best human being she can be. I don't really know what's going on in her life, but she's certainly having a time. You see her lifting golf trophies and anything she does, she puts a lot of thought into it, and she'll be fine. Let's put it that way. But I don't think she's at her best. You're right. Great win for Danielle Collins. A pity that she had to retire in the next round. But Ash Barty is doing fine.
Right. I just to be clear, I have no concerns with her as a player, as a person specifically. It's just I want to, you know, hopefully get to see her play, understand why, you know, she hasn't in the past. And I think my only concern is that she picks up too many sports she's good at. So it's like she'll just find something else to play and dominate at. But no, Barty is, you know, someone that's getting back into the swing of things. And it's going to be tough, Nico. Similar with Andreescu, who, look, just hasn't had the reps. I mean, she can play, especially on hard court, at a level with anyone. But she's admitted herself, it's going to take time. She needs to, the only way you're really going to get better and get back to that level is to play tennis. And that process is just starting, so it will be a little rocky at first.
Well, that's what we were talking about before, about Naomi Osaka being the new sheriff in town. But then she has
deputies. Yeah.
She has Halep. Kenin, I don't think it's quite there yet. You have, you know, some good. Don't count out Serena Williams.
No.
I mean, she, you know, she looks trimmer.
Yeah,
she's moving better.
She just got beat by a better player. I mean, I think her level was great.
You have Andreescu. If she gets back into things, Bencic played well, and she's only 23. She's been at it for a long time. You have Jen Brady. You have Vika Azarenka. We talked about Muguruza and Iga Swiatek. Yeah. So it looks to me the playing field is much more level than in the WTA.
And that's another reason why I think it's been harder for Serena to get 24. The field's pretty deep now too. You're not having, you know, you have a lot of young talent that's all kind of rounding into form. I agree with you, and I'm glad you brought up some of those names. Belinda Bencic is in the final. She beat Coco Gauff to get there in a semifinal, another three-set match. I want to mention Coco for a second because she makes her first 500-level semifinal. She does it in extraordinary fashion, having to qualify, winning a couple three-set matches, beat Shelby Rogers in one heck of a tennis match, and is starting to, get match tough. We knew the raw ability was there, but this is somebody now that is grinding out wins, playing long hours on court, and finding a way to make a difference in those little points that, you know, determine the outcome of matches. I think this is, you know, a real important step in whatever she becomes. We're all expecting great things, but this is an important step for Coco Gauff for all witnessing.
Well, I was lucky enough this week to call some of those matches, and Coco is impressive in the way she behaves. She's a couple of weeks short of being 17, believe it or not. And the only time she did something similar was in 2019, I believe in October, where she won a tournament after qualifying. She won 7 matches against tough opposition. But watching her play, she still has those batches of unforced errors that she will have to overcome. But she has those batches of brilliance where nobody can touch her. So I compare her a lot to Venus Williams in her style of play. Her backhand is just pristine. The forehand, sometimes it flies off because her arm is too far away from the body. But the serve, it's not consistent. It's very good serve. There's still too much of a difference between first and second. When she misses the first, her opponents are able to get it. But she's 17, man. Come on. So you said the word, tough. The problem with her, she plays a lot better when she's behind. And
it is crazy that she loses a lot of first sets, that's a good point. Still, we should point out, we'll be 17 next month, is still the youngest player in the top 350. So we're talking that's like amazing. Nobody else on her level at all at her age. Important to note. And look, even young players, youthful players are going to get tired and it's going to catch up with you. The Bencic match, Bencic is another like top 10 level player, so no shame in losing to her. I was impressed. I think, look, movement on the tennis court, it's special. Like, she just is an elite level athlete there, and I'm excited to see where it goes. This tournament's been fun because you get Bencic, who somebody else that is actually still relatively young. You feel like she's been around forever, but she's still, you know, early to mid 20s, taking place the final tonight against Swiatek, who, you know, under the radar, Nico. You brought her up when we were talking about deputies and potential contenders for another Grand Slam title. She won the French Open, dominating her way to victory, showing herself to be a pretty capable and pretty good hardcore player too during this run. Halep 3 sets in Australia, pushing her, and then now making the final of a 500 level.
There is no question about her power, her movement, her defense, her all court play. But my question is the emotional stability for Swiatek. She's a powerful player at 19, which is impressive. To be able to compete with those proven champions like Serena, like Halep, like Muguruza, like Osaka already. But her challenge is going to be emotional, I feel. She talked about it openly in the French Open because she, not out of nowhere, because she had been getting results, but she had not won a tournament.
Yeah.
And to win the French Open without dropping a set quite handily, the way she beat Cannon in the final, she was not overcome with emotion. She did not show a doubt. She hasn't this week, also playing in Adelaide. But she needs to be emotionally stable in order to perform. And I can't wait to witness that. And I am enjoying it thoroughly, you know, watching her play.
It's a heck of a final, Bencic and Swiatek, so it should be pretty exciting. The men are in two different tournaments we want to just mention as well. Montpellier in France and in Singapore, each with different storylines, each, you know, regular tour stops. Montpellier, we appear to maybe be heading for a final showdown of the top two seeds, Roberto Bautista Agut and David Goffin. Goffin, who has been kind of regaining his form after a tough couple of months, really a year with his game. But I got to talk to you about Bautista Agut because he took on another rising star in the ATP, Hugo Humbert, and beat him pretty handily. Roberto Bautista Agut, Nico, might be the most slept on, underappreciated guy on tour. The guy is just so consistent with his game, and he is another one that will just wear you down by how solid he is out there.
Well, that's the way he likes it. You know, there is a big Spanish armada. He hangs out with them from time to time, but he's not one of the guys in the sense that, you know, they reach out to each other. He's completely content in his farm with his horses. He's a horse lover. So
that
kind of explains it. He likes it very relaxed. An ex player, good friend of mine, Tomas Carbonell, helps him out from time to time, but he's his own guy. They play. Talk about the play. He has improved tremendously. He's very fast side to side. Not afraid to come in and finish up the point, but his strength is really counterpunching down the line with his flat shots, and his legs allow him to do that. So he's a player I really enjoy watching, have done so for many years. But let's not get ahead of ourselves with that Goffin matchup. But if it happens,
yeah,
check it out.
Yeah, I've just been impressed because he's not a household name, as you said. And even in majors, he can perform well in best of five because you said he has the cardio, he has the stamina, and he can counterpunch with the best of them. I'm really happy for Goffin as well, because he's had his ups and downs, and he's somebody that, you know, not long ago was one of the next cusp guys that was, you know, pushing top 10. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see. That could be a fun one as well. Singapore, I want to get your thoughts on that, because looks like we got signs of life for Marin Cilic. He won a thrilling three-set match over Kwan recently. And another guy who's been through the ringer with injuries, with just wear and tear on his body, and former Grand Slam champion Marin Cilic, you know, into the semis in Singapore, looking to do big things.
Yes, he's been unfortunate with the injuries in this latter part of his career. But unfortunately, his mentor, his coach, Bob Brett, passed. And yeah. And I think that kind of, unfortunately, but it kind of brought the fire maybe back into him. I don't know, because I don't know him personally. I spoken to him a couple of times when he was working with Goran especially. But I'm glad to see it. You know, he's 32. He just had his first baby, new things, new priorities. And he was a bit overweight, I feel. But I like what I saw this week, or what I'm seeing this week from him. And I look forward to it. He's one of those gentle giants, Grand Slam champion, you know, fantastic, great guy from what I hear. And I wish him the best. I knew and admired Bob Brett, so I know what he meant to him. And this is part of the great Bob Brett's legacy.
He gets Popperin next, an exciting young player in the semis. The other semi is Albert and Bublik. What are your quick thoughts on Alexander Bublik? There's a lot going on with his game.
There is a lot to think about. Yeah. Bublik. I think he's a guy coming into his own.
Yeah.
You know, he was all over the place. Obviously a great athlete, very talented, can create a lot of powers. He's a Russian Kyrgios, you know, better behaved, I think. Genius. I would put him in the genius category, but I think he's trying to bottle it up in order to be more organized. And if he manages to do that, there is plenty of growing space there. I enjoy watching him, and he's another young buck. You know, we have a lot of 21 to 24 year olds that are going to be around for the next 15 years. So it's a matter of, you know, picking your favorites and enjoying the ride.
Whether it's flair or machismo, cockiness, it's not a bad thing in tennis. I don't like
you need
to see
it.
This. Yeah.
Champions need it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a fine line between believing in yourself and looking cocky. You have to find the right message nowadays with the media. The media is so intrusive that it's a hard thing. I give the players a lot of credit to be able to perform on top of all the obligations that they have, and you see it in social media. You know, you don't want to expose yourself too much. And I look at what happened to Tsitsipas. As soon as he stopped, I don't know if it was physical or if it was technical, but as soon as he stopped with his presence, his massive presence in the media, he shot up the rankings and started winning the big matches. So I think it depends on the personality of each player, but I think tennis is in a good space right now.
Nico Pereira on the TC Live podcast. We're going to wrap up this week's show talking about what's in store for the next couple weeks. And Rotterdam's coming up. Top two players, two of the top players, I should say, going in different directions as far as this week goes. We're going to see Federer for the first time in over a year, but Rafa won't be there. Rafa releasing a statement saying that essentially his back has been having issues, which we all suspected. He found a temporary solution during AO, didn't get into specifics there, but said ultimately it's not in his best interest to play and does miss playing this event because it is well-liked on tour among the top guys. But no Rafa. So this is where we go into what we were talking about. He kind of knows where his bread's buttered. He wants to gear up for the clay court season. I can't say I'm completely shocked. Obviously love to watch Rafa play, but he's making the right decision for his career and specifically for this year.
It's all about Roland Garros. That's it. You know, he doesn't need any more accolades. Djokovic is way ahead. Actually, this week, if Medvedev performs, might pass him.
Yeah, number
and,
two.
And reach number two. I think, you know, most likely the week later. But let's not speculate on that. Let's speculate on Roger playing again. I mean, I can't wait. And we're going to have plenty of Roger the next few weeks. And the fact that the guys want to go to Rotterdam, it's because Richard Krajicek is the tournament director. And I have a funny story about this. I went to play Rotterdam, and Richard was young, 17. I've known Richard since he's 10. And Just Winnick, I believe his name was the tournament director. And Richard was very upset that he did not get the wild card for the main draw in his place, because he was one of the top juniors. And he was, you know, grumpy and mumbling about how he was never going to play the tournament again. Yeah. And look at him for 30 years later. And the guy's the tournament director. That's funny. They became best of friends. And it's just a fantastic story. But he does a great job there. Richard is one of those guys that I want to see involved in tennis for many years to come.
If you
want
to get tennis players to get irritated quick, just bring up the wild card topic, and then that'll just, then everything will start coming out. But no, Roger coming back, I'm excited too. Just can't wait to see what level he's at. Because as we were kind of mentioning before we started, his fitness guy, Pierre Paganini, who he's been working with forever, a Swiss guy who has a great reputation on tour and in the Swiss camp, he said we basically had to start from the beginning with Roger. We had to build back up his level as an elite athlete. And wasn't really something he had said before. He had the major knee surgery in 2016. He's a 39-year-old guy and the best ambassador for this sport or any sport that there is, but you know, we got to have real concerns until we see it, what kind of level and what kind of movement specifically he's going to have.
Listen, I have no concerns for Roger Federer. He's fine. He's playing because of the love of the sport, as long as he can keep the family traveling together. And I'm sure he's going to make the effort to get there. But listen, if there is somebody that you don't have to worry about, it's Roger Federer. But in terms of tennis, it's going to be interesting to see what he expects of himself on the court. That's going to really tell us something. You know, when you put those close-ups, when he's playing the match and he's at the top stage, I want to see how he reacts now at his age. After that long layoff, this is probably the third long layoff that he's had. And it's been almost a year, not the same at 32, 33 than, or even at 35 than at this stage. But that's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, he played this tournament to get the number one ranking a few years ago. And when he announced that he was playing, it sold out immediately. So they're going to love to see him there. Unfortunately, no Rafa. But the field is insanely loaded. And that's part of players want to get matches in and want to play. So this is not going to be your average 500-level tournament. This is going to be great tennis from start to finish.
It never is. And the atmosphere is fantastic. Rotterdam really dresses up for this event. And remember, I think I played the first or second event there. It's just a great tennis town, and the energy from the crowd, you know, it's contagious. And I hope they have a successful event and that we see great level tennis. The boys want to play, you know, and the women, you know, they really want to go out there and perform.
Again, shout out to Richard Krajicek for putting it together. Although as a kid, he made me a little sad when he beat Sampras in that Wimbledon. That was that was a little sad moment for me. But no, he puts on a great tournament for sure. Nico Pereira, blast talking to you. One final note: we should give props to the Hall of Fame class. It's going to be Leighton Hewitt and the original nine going in as a unit. The ladies that started the WTA Tour and were pioneers for women's sports going into the Hall of Fame with Rusty, Leighton Hewitt, 2-time Grand Slam champion. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm very involved with the Hall of Fame. I really like and enjoy the people there. Actually, I feel honored to partake with that group. Stan Smith is one of my idols, and what a gentleman. And he's the president, and he's everything you want as a figurehead for that. And then you have Todd Martin, who what else can you ask? You know, one of the great gentlemen of this game, and he's, you know, the CEO of the Hall of Fame. And they have a great group of people. I believe that is a project that is going to flourish in this next few years. And to talk about the class, I don't know why the nine were not there before. They should have been there a long time ago, and I'm glad that they did, that they are, and deservedly so, and it's fantastic for tennis. Then you have Dennis Vandermeer, the teacher of teachers. You know, what a gentleman. They're out in Hilton Head. What he did for many years, the class that he did it with, the people under his family tree of tennis teachers is fantastic. Look it up if you can. And then Leighton Hewitt. There was a bit of a discussion there because he's still playing some doubles here and there, but he's a shoo-in. He's a shoo-in first ballot Hall of Famer. You know, there were other candidates. There were other great candidates that didn't get in this year, but they'll be in the ballot. And then we have the 2020 class with Goran and Conchita, two great people, and they're going in also in the summer. But the best news is that Todd is very optimistic that the event is going to happen in Newport. So,
awesome.
Todd, if you're listening, Todd, I want to make my way to Newport, Todd.
Hook him up.
Go to the Viking Hotel.
Yeah. Give him that week-long tour.
It's one of my favorite places to go, picturesque place. I loved, you know, the pier there and the atmosphere and the Tennis Hall of Fame. Go check it out. If you're a tennis lover, go to that place. Go see the sites. It's growing, and it's something that it should be taken more into account. We seriously believe that being a Hall of Famer in tennis should be more recognized universally. In the States, it is, but I think it should travel. It should be a traveling thing, and it should be more publicized, and that's what we'll hopefully achieve in the next few years.
We got a great Hall of Fame class, and it's a prestigious organization. Check it out if you can. Congrats to all the nominees. Nico, thanks for coming on. More tennis coming up. You're now an official regular, I think, on this show. So that's a status not to take lightly.
Always a pleasure. That's one of the privileges of being easily available, you know.
That's true.
Calling matches in Singapore at those times, it frees up your day. So thank you very much, Mitch.
Nico Pereira on the TC Live podcast. We'll be back next week for another episode. Check out all the podcasts on tennis.com/podcasts. I'm Mitch Michaels. This was the TC Live podcast. We'll see you next week.